Good evening, everybody. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. This is for December 21st, 2023. And tonight we're going to take a little bit of a trip into the past, into yesteryear. And tonight is my annual Christmas Star Special. And so sometimes I put more emphasis on this topic in other years. But this year I'm going to have a few little twists on this. Also, I'm going to talk about who was this guy that we call Jesus? You know, who? Where did he come from? Where did you know? How does this fit in with what today you would call astrology? Christmas star, you know, signs in the heavens, three magi picking up their bag, packing their bags, and going following for months and months and months to find the guy, bringing the most precious gifts that they have in their kingdom. But who was this guy and how did he fit into the historical picture? And I mean, you can hardly do anything today without his life affecting the way we do business today, everything. And of course, there's a few ways of looking at that. But anyway, there's a show that I did. And this is December 16th, 2007. I was on a radio show. This is when I had lived in Upper Midwest, and I was a good friend with a guy named Brad Walton, who was a talk show host on a radio station called WCCO. It's also a television station. But anyway, he was a talk show host and invited me on to talk about the Christmas star, because we had been talking about this offline. As with many talk show hosts, I'm conversant with them. I talk to them offline. We chat. We send messages back and forth, talk about different topics. And Brad was interesting because he read my books and he studied my work. So when we had an interview, it wasn't just, chit-chat. He had some very solid questions, and he had very solid knowledge of what I had done. So anyway, we're going to take a little dip into the past here, into this radio show, and I'm going to play it in its entirety. It was actually about a two-hour radio show. 23 minutes of that show were on the Christmas Star. So I'm going to play that tonight and do a little discussion. Also tonight we have the winter solstice. So this is the 21st of December, and the time in Eastern time is 22:27. So that'd be 10:27 p.m. Eastern time is the exact moment of the winter solstice. And that's interesting in its own right, the shortest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere, the longest day of the year in the Southern Hemisphere. Also, it has a lot to do with the Christmas star and Christmas itself and the choosing of the date of December 25th, which was in ancient times the day of the solstice. Now, they were not off by 4 days. They knew when the solstice was. They had it well measured. It's just that the dating structure has changed over the millennium, the millennia. The fact that we have tonight the solstice, and then the sun starts moving back on its track to go towards summertime, springtime and summertime. The calendars that we use today are very interesting, but they're based on before the birth of Christ. So when you say B.C., that's before Christ, before the birth of Christ. And so they consider that the year zero, or the day zero, year zero, is the actual birth of Christ. The 25th of December is symbolic. It is generally considered, this is really foggy because there's so many different studies, so many different people that think they knew when Christ was born, etc. But it appears to have been around September. It appears to have been around September and maybe a few years B.C. according to our reckoning right now. And people have done studies on the scriptures, other texts, historians recounting of who Herod was and when Herod died relative to other events. And so they patched together this history, coming to the conclusion that Christ was actually born born, according to our reckoning today, our calendar reckoning today, a couple years BC. But let's go through some of the timing here, just knowing what we know. The edict went out. Augustus, the emperor of Rome, said that he wanted a count of all of the people in his empire. And this was, of course, the expanding Roman Empire. It had gone up and butted heads with the Persian empires to the east, which were very well developed, of course. And so, in fact, that's where the Magi came from, the three wise men. And so there's some discussion that the three wise men were not really kings so much as politicians. And also they were fully aware, as were the educated classes of the day, fully aware of things like the star, the expectation of the Messiah. Okay, so anyway, let me go back and pick up this topic of who was Jesus, where did he come from, how did he fit into this, the scheme of things historically. And it turns out that we have a very good record of this from the census that was going on. And so now to be counted in the census, people had to go back to the location of their family roots, the house, so to speak, that they were born in. And Mary was of the house of David in the structure. And a lot of people talk about the Jewish religion at this time, and it had already been thoroughly mixed with the Israelites. And now you have to separate this out today, because it has nothing to do with modern Israel at all, which are the Khazarians mainly, that had no historical presence in Israel. But anyway, the Israelites, if you go back to Moses, and you actually go back beyond that, and it's very interesting because the Old Testament is a book of lineage. That's what it is. It's a history book. And it's been so corrupted over the eons that it's hard to recognize. But basically, the house of David was one of the lineage offshoots of Abraham. And who were the Israelites? They were a Caucasian race that lived in the Mideast. And when Moses came along, they were artisans in Egypt. And there's the story where they were slaves and they were Jews. It's simply none of that is true at all. The whole issue with Pharaoh owning them, of course, is a very true story, and Pharaoh pursued them out into the desert. It's a situation very much like what we have today, where you have basically the remnants of the Israelites, the Caucasians, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, you know, from Northern Europe, and who are the original settlers in the United States. The wave of European settlers came. But it's the same thing. There's a type of slavery going on today in which the government believes it owns the people. In fact, just try it sometime. If you want to leave the United States and go on a flight someplace, they're going to tell you at the airport or where you're crossing the border, whatever, that you need a return ticket. You can't just leave. You need to have a way back so they can maintain the slavery, your slavery. It's the same thing today. But the Israelites in Egypt were artisans. When Venus the comet came through, that's when all of the horrific things happened, the plagues, you know, and all of those explainable by the comet Venus passing through. Okay, so anyway, what does this have to do with the Christmas star? Well, it has a lot to do with it, because the birth of Christ, because Christ was a descendant of the house of David. That's very clear. These were Israelites. And so they had to go, they were residents in Nazareth. Mary was, by the way, the niece of probably one of the richest men in all of Rome, Joseph of Arimathea. Remember, he was the guy that took Christ's body at the end after the crucifixion. And Joseph does pop up occasionally in the history books, but he's very much known throughout Rome, apart from having to be the great uncle of Christ. He was the wealthiest, probably one of the wealthiest, if not the wealthiest man in all of old Rome. He was the guy that supplied them with metal, which Rome did not have. And he had the contact with the Israelite populations of what is now Great Britain, of England, of the Isles. And he would bring that across, and imagine the guy that supplied the metal for the Roman army. This guy was rich. That's Mary's uncle. She was not some waif out in the middle of the desert, you know, sweeping dirt floors. She was, and of course, Nazareth was a humble town in those days, of course, but she was the one chosen to be the mother of Christ. And so the lineage was of the house of David, and they had to go back to the town of origin, which was Bethlehem. And of course, a lot of people had to go, and so that unrolls the whole Christmas story. But now I'm going to play this 20-some minutes from the Brad Walton interview. Like I say, this is from December 16, 27. And as with a lot of things, I don't fully concur with what I will talk about in this clip from 2007. In the clip, I talk about Venus being the Christmas star and becoming a comet. And the part about the comet and the part about explaining how Venus would be found in the east, and then they followed it to the west, and it explains that. But today, I don't believe that Venus was the Christmas star, as I talk about in this clip. So just to understand that when I'm talking to Brad, and Brad, by the way, has passed away a number of years ago, unfortunately, very good friend. But he, I had many, many interviews with him, the Calculate Primes interview. I don't know how many dozens of interviews I had with Brad over the literally decades. So at any rate, I may as well start this clip right now and once again to introduce it properly. This is from WCCO Radio, which is a Minneapolis-St. Paul Twin Cities radio station. It's also WCCO, I think, Channel 4, if my memory serves me correctly, in Minneapolis. And this was done in 2007, back when I was living there in the upper Midwest. Okay, and so the clip takes place as December 16, 2007. And I just want to reiterate that I'm not in agreement with what I'm talking about when I talk about Venus being the Christmas star. But it's a very good explanation of this situation where you have a celestial object that's in the east for some of the time, then it crosses around behind the sun, which comets do, and then it is in the west. And so that explains that part of the Christmas story. And so without further ado, here is the clip.
Minnesota's 830 WCCO, keeping you up to date with the latest news every hour from CBS, the most up-to-date weather, and discussion with your host, Brad Walton.
WCCO. Okay, welcome back as we continue here with Professor James McKenney as we talk about a number of different topics and insights, talking in this segment of our time together about the Christmas star. Well, you've had conversations with Jim before about the Christmas star, but some years ago, before that very first program on the Christmas star, Jim was talking to me off the air, and I said, hey, would you be willing to go on the air and talk about this on the air for our listeners in terms of giving them some deeper insight into what more than likely took place here thousands of years ago? So on the topic of the Christmas star, here's Jim.
Something many people are interested in for, you know, it's just that time of year. But was there really a star? And, of course, the legend has it that it had a long tail, which mm-hmm. would imply a comet.
Right.
And there's some very strange things about the Christmas star that make it, rather unbelievable. And I just want to read a quick passage here. regarding the three kings, mm-hmm. the Magi, as they're called, that came from, and these were astrologers. You have to understand, these were wise men.
Mm-hmm.
So when they talked about wise men back then, typically they were people who understood the stars, understood the workings of the world, the politics of the world, mm-hmm. and were considered, and the leadership of the world back then very much went by what was going on in the heavens. And there's a mm-hmm. there's a very good reason for that, because probably about 2,000 years earlier, Venus, that we think of as that big bright light up in the sky, it's the morning mm-hmm. star right now. In fact, I think it's passing through to the night, over to the evening star. Was Venus a number of thousands of years prior to zero or 2000 BC, let's put it that way,
mm-hmm.
was a comet in the solar system, and it caused mm-hmm. quite a bit of damage in the solar system. And this is very well recorded, and that whole subject is very controversial today. But in modern times, we have seen, and I have the satellite images of Venus, where all of a sudden it will form a comet tail.
Hmm.
And this is part of its discharging the solar capacitor, just like all the planets do.
Mm-hmm.
We've observed the same type of activity around our very own moon with a sodium tail that developed at one point. And so every now and then these planets or planetary bodies will go extend out a comet tail, and this is part of the discharge activity. So let's get back to the Christmas star.
Mm-hmm.
What's very strange about the legend is that these wise men saw the star in the east. Now, they were from the east, but they followed it to the west. And I just want to read this passage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's get the geography of this straight. Bethlehem is over in the, of course, right off of the Mediterranean mm-hmm. on the east side. And these guys came from way over in the east, far east of that. So they were coming from the east, going west. And here's what it is written. It says, when they heard the heralding of the king, they departed, and lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them until it came over and stood where the young child was. So how is it that they saw the star in the east but followed it west mm. to get to where Bethlehem was?
Yeah.
And that's very much a strange thing. And here's what the answer is. And this also has very significant astrological significance. And there again, we talk about astrology today, and it's some people say, well, that's voodoo science, but you have to understand the times. These people lived by that.
Mm-hmm.
And Herod and the other leaders of the Roman Empire at the time understood this also, because they had their astrologers, or whatever you want, astronomers, working on these also. And the prediction for the Messiah was this very specific celestial event. And so anyway, here's what happened. It's hard to explain this by just talking, but basically, say you reach out with your arm, and that's where the sun is, at the end of your arm.
Mm-hmm.
Then between the sun and us, which would be Earth, the Venus comes around in its orbit, and it moves much faster. So it comes around the sun from the left side, comes between us and the sun, moves around to the right, and then goes around behind the sun. It moves then to the left behind the sun. And what happens is that Venus at that time kicked up, and it was far more active in historical times, 2,000 years ago. And so when Venus is on the right side of the sun, as we view the sun, it is the morning star,
mm.
and it appears in the east. As it passes around behind the sun, it becomes invisible for a couple days, and then all of a sudden emerges on the other side and becomes the evening star in the west. And so this is what happened relative to the Christmas event. They saw Venus extending the tail out. It was in the east. It was the morning star. So that explains why they saw the star in the east. And then as it became the evening star, it was in the west. They followed it to the west until it stood over the spot in Bethlehem. Because as the Venus progresses, it then takes its highest position away from the sun. Excuse me. And therefore, that would be astrological of astrological significance, because it's the farthest movement it's going to make to the left side of the sun in the evening sky, the highest, so to speak. So it's high in the sky, in the western sky, and it just sits there for a number of days. So that's what they talk about when they say it just sat there, and when it did that, they knew they were at the spot.
Hmm.
And so, literally, it was the planet Venus extending out, becoming a comet-like structure. They observed it first in the eastern sky, but followed it west.
My. And that's unusual also.
Well, yeah, and this happens, but what the unusual part about it was that Venus actually extended the tail out,
yes,
to become visible.
Hmm.
And a lot of people... like a good example is Comet Holmes right now, that really is bigger than the full moon in the sky.
Yes.
So if you go out and look at it, all of a sudden on October 23rd, it became very enhanced,
mm-hmm,
due to these electrical alignments, where before it was only visible to the most powerful telescopes.
So in terms of messianic fulfillment, this is what they were looking for, these astronomers, astrologers, and the people that were out there, the Magi moving from east to west, they
right.
were looking for this kind of event?
They were looking for this specific event, and when it happened, they said, this is it. And it was so widely known that these three kings came from different countries and met on the way and mm-hmm. were converging on Bethlehem as they went there. But and the other part of it was that Herod and his crew of people were very disturbed about this, and that's when they said, you know, we have to get rid of this, and they sent out the order to do away with all the firstborns.
Mm-hmm.
So this took place in the firstborn males, and they actually did this. This is a historical record. So they knew also the historical or astrological significance of that event.
My. Interesting, Jim. I never heard it told quite like that, and that's why years ago when you told me about this interesting dynamic, you talk about the Christmas star off the air. It's great to have you repeat it again here on the air, because the mystery of the timing and then the connection that they made and what they were looking for took
right.
place. Is there any written record or understanding of what had given them the cue, so to speak, to look for this star to move from east to west? I mean, where was that recorded, let's say, prior to the actual event itself, so they knew what to look for?
That, you know, it goes back literally thousands of years.
Okay.
They were waiting for that event. And that's the thing. See, a lot of this information about the beliefs at that time have mm-hmm. been lost, because I believe pretty much through the Middle Ages, people didn't understand what all of these events really meant.
Right.
There were actual events. There was a great flood. There was the destruction of Earth, a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that was really taken out, and the real records we have of a lot of this come from books that were kept in the background, so
yeah.
to speak.
Yeah. Well, the fact that they were looking for this, and the fact that they had been looking for it for thousands of years, indicates that there's something very specific that was communicated to them.
It was very specific.
Yeah.
It was very well known amongst the leadership
uh-huh.
and the population. They were poor people like the shepherds and this. They were very uneducated people. So you
right.
had the controllers who were very well educated mm-hmm. and understood these type of things, and then the masses who were just, had no knowledge of anything
right.
like this. They were just they lived in these countries very poorly educated relative to all these events.
Right.
But they were all, what's clear is they were all waiting for this Messiah.
And whatever happened here in the heavens with Venus was so well defined and so different than what had been going on for, let's say, hundreds or if not thousands of years prior to, it basically stuck out like a sore thumb and saying, aha, this is it.
Well, it'd be very interesting to look for other alignments that may have occurred at that
time. Oh, yeah.
And that's relatively difficult. Like when I went back to 1892 to do my work relative to Comet Holmes, we had some very good observations from Edwin Holmes, the astronomer in London.
Right.
And we knew he was looking at Jupiter, and then he swung back to M31, which was just a few degrees to the right of that.
Yeah.
And so we have this information, but if you reverse the solar system back and the current orbit of Comet Holmes, for example, none of these end up in the same place. The belief that he could be looking at Jupiter and a few degrees off was Comet Holmes. What you realize is that Comet Holmes is in a very different orbit today than it was then.
Why?
But it gives us the position of where it was, and then you can track back the days and weeks before that to see these other electrical alignments that came up and kicked it off.
Yeah.
But if you try and go back 2,000 years to the situation with Venus, it's much more difficult.
Right.
Trying to pinpoint that exact time.
Hmm. You took my next question, actually, because my next question, as you talk about the Christmas star, is, say, in modern science, our assumption is that things have always been this way, that there have not been these more definitive moments where things have changed radically in the solar system. And yet, if you look at some of these ancient texts, it's like when you make a correction for a certain kind of course you're on, if you're indeed doing some calculations with regards to timetables and orbits and some of the crucial critical things, it would actually give you a correction for getting back on track with regards to a certain kind of alignment or a planetary event, knowing that there were some variations on a theme here throughout history with the planets, for example, what you noted there just about Venus itself.
Right. Well, another good example is there were tablets discovered, clay tablets, that were discovered from Babylonia, and these were found in the Mideast, and they're called the Venus tablets, and they're very well known, and they talk about dates of inferior conjunctions of Venus with Earth. And when you go back, the farther back you go, B.C., like 100, 500, 1500 B.C.,
right.
The orbit of Venus is very different. And so what did astronomers do? They started picking and choosing and throwing out some of the dates and said, oh, these guys didn't know what they were doing because Venus couldn't have been there at this time. And the point is that Venus's orbit was changing dramatically back then, about 1500 B.C., because it was in a comet phase. And as I said, it did a lot of damage back then. But its orbit was changing due to what we call tail drag. The tail material is being brought into the planet, and it's like going through molasses, so to speak. It's slowing down, and its orbit is changing. And that's why when you look at the Mayan calendar, everybody talks about the Mayan calendar today, and they talk about 2012 and the solstice on 2012. But the Mayan calendar had nothing to do with the sun and the moon. It was based on the cycles of Venus.
Absolutely. You're right on.
And that's why, because Venus, at the heart of the Mayan calendar, was a ceremony that they took on the conjunction of Venus, and that's why they had very close timing. You find sundials and calendars, like in Zimbabwe, based on Venus. You go down to the Altiplano in Peru, and you find some of the very ancient pre-Inca cities. They're based their calendar and their sundials, etc., are based on Venus. They have nothing to do with the sun or the moon.
You're right on. And as you talk about that, I think as we have made assumptions that everything's kind of based on the sun, much of the ancient texts, or many of them, as you talk about the Incans or the Mayans or the other aspects of some of the geology as it's been created throughout various parts of the planet and different parts of human history, is not necessarily directed towards the sun. Some of it's the North Star, and Venus is a key player here, and I'm always curious about how it became a key player, and also as you talk at times about Mars, how Mars was once a blue planet and became then a red planet. I think after the first of the year, I'd like to do a more comprehensive program again, as we were alluding to this here just before we got on the air, maybe a program here that would focus on a broader scope of Earth's history and some of the changes that have taken place with regards to the planets like Venus and Mars and right. Earth itself. It'd be very meaningful to go back in there, because you've talked about that in some of your writings. You talk about Tesla and Atlantis. And
right. Well, you know, we were talking off the air before the show. We were talking about the ocean, underground ocean, that has just been discovered
yes.
on Earth. And these are things that people are finally waking up. I've talked before about oil deposits, which are locked beneath the or salt deposits, which came from oceans. These are miles underground, and the veins of salt from an ancient ocean bed.
Yeah.
Well, how did all this rock get piled on top of the ocean? Or in the case of this other ocean, how did it get there? What geological process had to happen on Earth to create these? You know, what we're just discovering today.
Yeah. A question here, Jim, because we're coming up to the bottom of the hour, and I want you to talk a bit about the website and the resources again. There was an article on CNN this week, and we can certainly get back into this. In fairness to Jim, I just sent this to him. The title of the headline, Arctic is Screaming. You're talking about the possibility.
Oh, I did see that,
yeah.
I had time to go through that, yeah.
And my question is, if we can give an overview, kind of a nutshell summary here, what if there was no polar cap on this planet? You talk about the changes in the Gulf Stream and other aspects of this accelerated pace of change, and we can get into some of the other understandings about what's happening here indeed with the melt on this planet. But it seems to be documented with the photographs, and I certainly much more inclined to agree with your observations about it as we've spoken in the past. But what if there's no polar cap in 4 or 5 years if it melts that quickly?
Well, what happened is they take pictures of the North Polar Cap from space.
Right.
And then they take it in the middle of winter when it's the largest, and then, of course, it recedes.
Mm-hmm. In the summer months.
And it used to recede just a little bit, and now it's almost half the size of the ice cap in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And they're going, if this continues, this oscillation in size, there could be a time when it just doesn't grow again.
Right.
And it literally goes away.
That would have a huge global effect, wouldn't it?
That ice melting, and what it would do is drop down into the basin of the ocean and cause a current, and it's got to be doing that already, changing the sub-oceanic ocean currents in their directions. And one of the fears, of course, the movie The Day After Tomorrow,
right,
based on the Art Bell and Whitley Strieber book, Coming Global Superstorm, was based on the idea that these global changes could occur very quickly. And, of course, there's a lot of speculative science in that. But the point is that, we don't know what's going to happen here. The one thing, in fact, I wrote this little note on the bottom of the front page of that article.
Yeah.
I said, nobody is talking about what we should be doing with all of this fresh water that's melting.
Right. Because, so it's fresh water, not salt water.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, because it's when it freezes, it's right. The salt, it's only fresh water in the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
So, or in the ice cap, it falls in. Mainly it's piling up from rain that falls and builds up on top of it.
My.
And, or snow, I should say.
That brings up another question. We could go on all morning, I think, but you talk about the salt water in the oceans, and you have the fresh water here that's frozen. Now it's melting, going into the oceans.
Right.
And you say nobody's doing anything with that, and there would be another source of fresh water for us.
Oh, absolutely. There's literally, between the Antarctica, which is the biggest ice cap, the North Polar Cap is not as big, but the North Polar Cap is floating. There's no land underneath it. And then you have Greenland. Between those three ice caps, we have 20 times the amount of fresh water as contained in all of the freshwater resources in the world, including the Oglala Reservoir in Nebraska, including the Great Lakes, including the large lakes in Russia.
Why?
All of these resources are, we have literally 20 times that amount of fresh water exists in these ice caps.
Why?
And they're melting. Hello?
Yeah, really.
So let's quit arguing about global warming and whether it's caused by you driving your SUV down the road. We've got to go get this water.
Absolutely.
And do something with it. And there actually is an easy way to do it. I've worked on these methods. Other people have. And you could literally carve out large sections of ice and move it with sails to various. You could move it to the Sahara Desert. You could move it to the desert regions, the southwest United States.
Right.
And harvest this ice before it breaks off and simply floats out to sea and melts into
My.
The ocean.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, let's come back here very soon, Jim, do another program on some of these larger mosaics that you can develop here for us to give us an understanding of maybe, I guess the value of history is to learn how to go into the future, really having a good context of what the past has been about and what the present is about gives me a greater passion and a sense of how shall we then go into the future? Let's stop arguing about the different things that we get lost in. Let's say, let's find some good creative ways to capture, for example, what you've noted here just now. And let's talk about some of the significant alignments for 2008 and the first part of 2008 then.
Great.
Okay. The website again?
JMCCS, as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo, .com. Some people like to use mail order, but
right.
All that information is on the website. If
okay.
You don't have computers, just find somebody or go to a library and log on. And there's 3 gigabytes of information on that
yeah.
page. So
I want to call special attention to your latest Calculate Primes and also your weather book, which is simply, as we've talked quite a bit about weather here this morning,
right.
And you talk about these alignments, that weather book is just phenomenal, as you talk about.
300 pages of very readable information.
Yeah, it's very accessible information for everybody listening here and talking about the world of science, and Jim writes that way. A lot of depth. You get to the website, jmccsci.com. Jim, thank you for
okay,
this morning.
Okay, talk again. And
absolutely.
We'll have a little pre-Christmas get-together and have lunch or something.
Absolutely.
Okay, everybody, this is the real James McCanny right now, and that was the clip, 20-some minutes of an interview. Now, remember, that was 2007, December 16, 2007, with host Brett Walton of WCCO Radio. And, you know, when I listen again to that clip, and I'm talking about Venus, it's a very good clip, but the other thing is that what I'm convinced of now is that it's that same process that Venus would go through, but truly it's a different comet, and a long-period comet. So that would put a long-period comet on the length of, say, something like Hale-Bopp, maybe a 4,500-year orbit or something like that, where they knew that this thing was coming back and would be not an Earth-threatening comet, but a big comet and a very unusual comet. And I often think of what kind of comet would be so unusual, because if you're a watcher of the skies, there are maybe 10 comets visible at any given time, especially back in those days when they didn't have TV or video games or streetlights. And you're out in the middle of the desert and it's really dry, and man, you can see all the stars. You can see the whole heavens. And that was their TV. You know, they watched it, they studied it. And so a big comet, you know, and going way back in history, if they were looking at something that was, say, predicted thousands of years earlier, and that those people thousands of years earlier knew that on this given time frame, this big comet was coming through again, and it had the characteristics of Venus, the planet, in that it could be discovered in the east and then followed to the west. So at any rate, a lot of things going on here. And I'll just say, too, that when we try and figure these things out, we are mortal men. And don't think that you're going to have all the answers and have it all correct. Just not going to happen. But it gives us an understanding. It gives us a basis of understanding. now that we have more scientific knowledge of what comets are, how they work, their orbits. Remember, back in the day when Christ was around and earlier, they didn't really know about celestial mechanics. They did not know, you know, about, excuse me, they didn't know about, you know, recurring comet orbits. But if you go much farther back, they probably did know about these things. And like the Hopi Indians, they knew about the Kachina dolls, the Kachina dolls, which represent Hale-Bopp and a companion comets. The Hopi knew about this, the Hopi Indians. By the way, I just saw the other day another special. I did this back in, it must have been around 2010. It was filmed in Paramount Studios in Hollywood. I went there and did a six-part series. It's called Approach to, what? Let me just look and see if I got the name of it here. Countdown, that's the name, Countdown to Apocalypse. It's a six-part series film for the History Channel, and I'm pretty much in all six pieces of that. It's a six-part series. And I was listed as the author of Professor James McCanny, author of Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes. And then you can see me dressed differently because it was filmed on different days. But the thing that I represented was the Hopi Indians, legends of the Hopi Indians relative to apocalypse. So if you ever see that, you can see me as a bit younger person. That was, you know, what, 14 years ago? And by the way, at the same time, I called up George Norrie in the studio there, and George said, hey, why don't you come by and do a live session? He was just starting to have live guests live in the studio, and I was his first guest. And so I went over there, and what's that area of Los Angeles again? I can't remember, but anyway, it's a suburb of Los Angeles. So I go over there, and there's security at the building, of course. So I go in and get through security and go up there, and Tom Danheiser is there, George, and I do a radio show with George. And then that night, George was releasing a book called Talking to the Dead, one of George's great books. And by the way, I just don't know how that guy does what he does. I mean, there are people that, I'm good in science, I'm good in mathematics, but to be a talk show host on a major show like that and deal with all of the people he has to deal with on a nightly basis and know all of their work, because when he would interview me, and I have, what, dozens and dozens of interviews on there, on Coast to Coast AM, he knew my subject matter. And, you know, a lot of times I wasn't the only person on that night. It would be other people. And then tomorrow night, the next night, he would have other people. And I go, well, how does this guy do this? You know, a great capacity for information and know everybody and know who everybody is and the history, everything. It's just mind-boggling. Anyway, I did a live show with George in the studio, and there's a picture of him. He's got his arm around me, and he's holding up his book, Talking to the Dead. He was releasing it that night. Very interesting. But anyway, that was the same week that I was at the Paramount Studios in Hollywood filming this Apocalypse, Countdown to Apocalypse was the name of the series. And I believe it was around 2010, so it had to be in that time frame. But the reason I was talking about that was I was referring to the Hopi Indians in my knowledge of the Hopi Indians and the Kachina dolls, and what the Kachina dolls represent was Hale-Bopp. No question about it. The Hopis, when Hale-Bopp showed up, they said, that's it. And they were expecting the other bigger Kachina to come in after Hale-Bopp. And that's when I did my Harrington expedition down to Patagonia with Harrington-grade equipment 8-inch. He used 8-inch astrograph. I was using a little bit bigger, you know, Meade-type telescope. But and what I did is I verified that in that region, that southern region that only can be viewed in May to June of the year, that there was nothing else down there. That the Hale-Bopp was the individual comet. And my estimate was that the companion of Hale-Bopp was probably a separate comet on the previous visit. And that's why the Hopi Indians believed there were two comets, not one. And that Hale-Bopp itself was the bigger Kachina. And Hale-Bopp was a big comet. If we would have come closer, it would have covered the whole sky. And we would have seen activity in a comet. And as it was pretty far away. It was a quarter away across the solar system. But anyway, why am I talking about that? Because the Hale-Bopp would have been the type of comet that could have been the Christmas star. But the other thing about comets is they have this sunward spike. And so, but the thing I wanted to mention about the Christmas star was that I believe that it was an unusual comet. And this unusual comet was known about thousands of years ago. And they knew when this baby was coming back. And everybody was sitting there looking for it, this comet, and I estimate that it probably had three nuclei. It was such an unusual comet that it would just be no mistaken. And that's, it's something that's really not passed down because we don't know, and a lot of people are guessing. Most people today believe that the Christmas star was a planetary alignment, and categorically is simply not the case. Planetary alignments last a few hours, not even a day, not even a week, not, you know, a few hours, and then they dissipate, they're gone. Whether it's a physical alignment or whether it's an optical alignment of just where planets look like they're lined up. And people go through these, I read them all the time, and every year, all these astronomers come out, oh, it's a planetary alignment. No, no. No, the simple reason it would never, ever in a million years be a planetary alignment is because, number one, they happen all the time. These planetary alignments, if you want, I don't care what planets you're talking about, whether it's Mercury or Jupiter, Saturn and Mars, pick your favorite planetary alignment. These things happen all the time, and they only last a couple hours. You know, the Christmas star was not a planetary alignment, just pure and simple. It was a comet, just like it was a comet that the Israelites saw when they came out of Egypt with Moses, that lit up the sky, the pillar of light in the sky. That was the planet, that was the comet Venus that eventually became the planet Venus. And so here's the thing. You know, we got the Noah's Flood. What was the Noah's Flood? The Earth passing through a comet tail for 40 days and 40 nights, or a long time. We have the Moses event when Venus is coming by and we have the Christmas star, and all of these are related to comets. And you know, you have like a guy like Velikovsky, one of the premier scholars of the 20th century, absolute premier scholar, just trashed by a bunch of idiots, Sagan and the boys, bunch of complete. You know, I was around those people. I was elbow to elbow, not really with Carl Sagan himself. He was off becoming a movie star when I was at Cornell. But the rest of the NASA crew, what a bunch of jerk, stupid ass people. That's the best thing I could say about them. Bunch of morons, howdy, pompous, arrogant assholes. That's the best thing I could say about those people. And idiots, didn't know what they were doing, you know, head in the clouds, no. And trashing a guy like Velikovsky, who was a true gentleman and scholar, and, you know, ridiculing him, you know, not something that should ever occur in an educational or in an academic environment. And the NASA boys were wrong about everything they did. What a bunch of clowns. What a bunch of clowns. But anyway, the reason they, of course, these were the Tier 2 scientists that got motivated to protect their turf. All the time, the Tier 1 scientists, knowing fully well that Velikovsky was right on. But he was hitting into the information that's sacred to the people up on the World Bank level, the Jesuits, the people who would kill somebody like Malachi Martin, okay, who exposed them for being associated with NASA and the whole issue of Hale-Bopp, etc. Okay, you know, the CIA, the police force of the World Bank, you know, and having the whole Planet X nutcase shows going on to distract the public from the case that which I always suspected, but later made the complete chain of events there, that the Planet X was Hale-Bopp. Hale-Bopp was Planet X, literally. And then they come out with the crazy lady talks to aliens, Planet X is going to crash into Earth, you know, on May 15, 2003. All that was CIA disinformation. And then it kept on through the 2000s, you know, the Mayan calendar, we're all going to die. All of that CIA misinformation to just throw so much flack out there that nobody could really see through it to see what was really going on this planet. But coming back to it, all of this related to comets. They don't want you to know about comets or the significance of comets in the history and development of man in the last 10,000 years. And that's a way of keeping people stupid. It's like teaching, I won't even go into other things that are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of things that are taught today in science and hundreds of things in just general life in general, the history of man and anthropology, archaeology, you know, the geology, weather, you know, the list goes on of all of this stuff that's just plain garbage. Hundreds of fields of study which are totally corrupted and people just don't have a clue. And that's why a lot of people listen to this show, is because I can wade through that. I've been there. The information I give you on this radio show, it's not because I read it on somebody's webpage or read it in a book or something. It's because I learned it myself the hard way. Getting back to the Christmas star. The Christmas star was a comet. And back to the Brad Walton interview, at that time I was talking about it being Venus. And no, I don't believe it was Venus. But the discussion on how it was observed in the east and then comes around behind the back of the sun and then they follow it to the west and how it rises to its highest point in the sky and then just sits there. That's a comet. That's exactly what Venus does. Venus was a comet back in historical times, you know, thousands of years ago. And it's still in that orbit that comes between us and the sun. It's still doing the same thing. And a regular comet would do the same thing. It would go around behind the sun. And like I say, the people who predicted this, now this is getting back to a very important point that Brad asked, very good question, said, who would have known about this thousands of years earlier? Well, of course, they knew about comets. They had science. They were scientifically adept. They knew about orbits. And all of that knowledge was lost through the Noah's flood, through the Moses event, when Earth was just completely almost extinction-level events that brought man back to basically a very rudimentary level. And remember, it was the library of Joseph of Arimathea, who I mentioned earlier, the businessman in Rome, that led to the Colburn. And that's when the Colburn came out that they just freaked out. The CIA and the boys just freaked out. And that's why they threw everything they could to try and dispel the value of that. And got a bunch of clowns to pretend they wrote the Colburn, published it on Amazon, And, you know, if you want to get the Colbrin, it's Kolbrin. Get it from Goody's Bookstore from the Chaldean Trust, with a C, Chaldean Trust. Good people preserved that book and made it available to the public. Anyway, that's another story. I'm not going to go into that tonight. So anyway, back to the Christmas star. The Christmas star was a comet. It's very interesting. The Colbrin starts out with a discussion of the history of man, and the two histories of man, actually, and it's related to devastation by comets, the sky monsters, they call them. And once again, you have to understand that the history of man very much affected by large comets that had devastating effects on planet Earth. Okay, so the Christmas star was a comet. No question, it was not a planetary alignment. Anybody who talks planetary alignment, I'll just be kind, they don't know what they're talking about. Because, I must have seen in my day 50, oh, it's a planetary alignment. And all the discussion and all of the hem-haw about planetary alignments, the one simple or two simple facts is they don't last very long. And they happen all the time. And the Christmas star was a rare event. Thousands of years people waiting for that event, for the Christmas star. And you know, planetary alignments happen probably once a month. There's a good planetary alignment. So if you were a planetary alignment Christmas star theorist, you could find one every month. It's just not the way it is. The Christmas star was not a planetary alignment, period. It was a comet, a very unusual comet. Okay, so anyway, I think I might write a book about this at some point and also expose all of the goofiness that's gone on around this point. But it comes back to the point that the people who run the world just don't want you to know what comets are. Imagine this. The European Space Agency landed on a comet. There was no water. There's no ice. It's not a dirty snowball. They know it, but they still call it a dirty snowball. Is that, you know, what does that tell you? Okay. I'm about out of time here. Just remind you, become water independent. I have the best water filter products on the planet. And some of that water came from comets. Yeah. And you should filter it before you drink it or shower in it. Go to the webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com, and go to my new webpage, the jmccsci.com page, which just got hacked, and hopefully by now it's rebuilt. About 15 gigabytes of information wiped out. But we, of course, have backups, but it takes a long time to get that backup loaded. But go to the webpage, the JMCC Water Filters webpage did not get hacked. It's very much there, and you can order my water filter products. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. Merry Christmas, everybody. And we are at the crossroads. Good night.